Well, hello, everybody. This is Brian Tracy, and we're going to be talking tonight about magical marketing. We're talking about some of the most important ideas that I have ever learned in 30 years of studying, building and managing 22 different businesses, and consulting for more than 500 corporations. And what I've come to the conclusion of, which is not a remarkable conclusion, but it's simply this, is that all business is marketing. All strategic planning is market planning. Every single effort that takes place in the world of business ultimately comes down to marketing. When IBM got into trouble a few years ago, they brought in McKinsey and Company, and McKinsey and Company charged them $3 million to do an analysis of their problems, and they sat down with Lou Gerstner, and he said, okay, what's the problem? And they said, we've come up to our conclusion. He said, low sales. He said, well, that's great. That's very helpful. What is the solution? They said, the solution is high sales. And everything else is commentary. It's either high sales or low sales. And so what they did is they began to put their emphasis back on marketing. The entire company went from being a technical company to being a marketing company once again, which is what made IBM great and which made you great. So your ability to market effectively is the most important single business skill you can develop if you want to make a lot of money, be successful and prosperous, and retire financially independent. And marketing is the key to business success in any economic situation. You see, no matter what the economy, even when it's booming, there will always be more sellers than buyers. There will always be more people offering products and services than there are people to buy the products and services. So therefore, customers are going to have to choose from different products and services available, and your job is to make sure that they choose yours. So your ability to enter into and succeed in a competitive market determines your sales, your growth, your profitability, and your long-term success. So let me give you the definition of marketing. The purpose of marketing is to make selling unnecessary. Let me repeat that. The purpose of marketing is to make selling unnecessary. Of course, it will never happen. But the whole purpose of marketing is like an artillery barrage that softens up the opposing force so that when the ground troops go in, the salespeople go in, the sales are very, very easy, or at least much easier. The purpose of marketing is to tell people what you sell and why it is that they should buy it in comparison or competition with anything else. So that's what we'll talk about doing today. Now, the purpose of marketing is also to differentiate your product or service from other products and services. The only purpose of marketing is to differentiate, is to state things, claim things, prove things, illustrate things that show that what you are selling is superior, different to, and better than your competitors. Any other form of marketing is a relative waste of money. So, your job is to simply make a decision. And here's the goal for this talk today. Our goal is for you to double your sales and double your profitability. And the only question we ask is how. How do we double our sales and double our profitability? And it comes down to marketing. All of the hundreds of years and billions of dollars that have been spent in marketing research and marketing strategy come down to the basic concepts which we're now going to discuss. So you start off with yourself. Many of you are individuals working with your own companies. Some of you work with small companies. Some work with larger companies. But the principles are all the same. The first question in marketing is always, what business are you really in? What business are you really in? Now, you define your business in terms of what you do and what your product does for your customer. There's only one reason that people buy anything, and that is to improve their lives or work in some way, and especially in a cost-effective way. So you always define your business in terms of what it does. The big mistake that we make is we're constantly telling people what our business is rather than what it does. And what people buy, going back to expectations theory, what people buy is how they expect to feel and to be as a result of accepting your offer. The most important single determinant is the emotional determinant. Will people feel happier, more secure, prouder, more comfortable, more relaxed, more beautiful, safer, richer, more respected, more admired, and so on? These are all the emotional ingredients that determine 80% of the buying decision. So you say to yourself, what does my product actually do for my customers? Let me give you a famous example. When Xerox brought out a two-sided copier, that meant it copied on both sides of the page, they announced it to all of their sales force at a large annual meeting, and then the sales force broke into small groups to discuss how they were going to market this copier. Junior salespeople formed into one set of groups, and more experienced, advanced salespeople formed into others. They then had consultants sit in on the groups and take notes. Here's what they found. The junior salespeople were all talking about the features and the speed of copying and the technology and how it flipped the page over and how it collated and how many pages it would copy per minute, and that was going to be their thrust for selling. What did the senior people talk about? The senior people talked about who could use this machine in such a way that it would more than pay for itself, which would make the sale a slam dunk. And their conclusion was that companies that did large mailings, who were currently printing only on one side of the page and were paying high amounts for postage, would be the best customers. So they sat down and they sliced it and diced it and worked out that large companies that did large mailings, that had large mailing rooms and had large postal expenses, if they used a two-sided copier, they could dramatically reduce postage costs, which, if it was sufficient, would more than pay for the copier and give them a profit. So the junior salespeople went out and they said, look at all the bells and whistles that this machine has. The senior salespeople went out and said, would you like a free $100,000 two-sided Xerox copier that not only costs you nothing but makes you a profit every month? And how many do you think they sold? They sold them by the truckload, because they could demonstrate on paper that what this does for you is you put this machine in your company and it pays you several thousand dollars a month in savings on mailings. So it was easy to sell. So think in terms of what your product does, how it benefits and how it enriches the life or work of your customer. Now, who is your customer? When we talk about who is your customer, all the money that is spent in marketing research, all the thousands of surveys and questionnaires and door knockers and telephone surveys are all aimed at one thing, to focus that telescope, to tighten up the focus and determine exactly who is my customer. So what I ask you to do is ask, who is your ideal customer? Who is your ideal customer? In other words, if you could stand back and say, who would be the perfect customer for me? Who would be the perfect customer? And think about who this perfect customer might be, and you begin by approaching your market from the standpoint of pleasing your perfect customer with your product or service, or developing or adjusting or modifying your product or service so that it would be more pleasing to your perfect customer. So here's an exercise you can do. Imagine running an ad for perfect customers. You're going to take out space in the newspaper, and you're going to run an ad. And you're going to say, wanted, customers with the following qualifications and specifications, exactly as if you were going to hire somebody. And so here are some of the things that you ask. First of all, what would be the age of your perfect customer? What would be the sex of your perfect customer? What would be the occupation of your perfect customer? What sort of work do they do? What kind of level of experience would they be? What position would they have in their company? How long would they have worked in a particular position? What sort of income do they have? How much money do they make? What is their level of education? How much education do they have and in what subjects? And what is their purchasing history? This is a real good question. What have they bought in the past? Now, in marketing, one of the most important things you do is you ask, who is my customer today and what are the trends? Who will my customer be tomorrow, the way things are going? Who could my customer be in the future if I was to change the way I did my business in some ways? Let me give you an example. I had a person in our coaching program here in San Diego, which is described on the website, and she wanted to double her income. So the question we asked is, who is your customer today? Well, her customer today was a customer that bought her product or service she sold at a certain price. They said, well, the very best way to double your income is to sell to people who buy products and services that you sell that cost twice as much. She said, oh my, what would I have to do to change my business so I was selling to people who bought twice as much. And over the course of the next 12 months, she reorganized her business so that by the end of 12 months, her average customer was buying twice as much as her previous customers. So she was making the same number of sales and working the same number of hours, and she was making twice as much. So think of who could your perfect customer be in terms of age, sex, occupation, position, income, and so on. Now, finally, who should your customer be? Who should your customer be? If you could wave a magic wand and have the perfect customer, who should your customer be? And then the next question is, how do you get that customer? What do you have to do inside your business to get that customer? Perfect example. After World War II, the Japanese emerged from the rubble and began manufacturing small products that, when they were exported, got the derogatory name of Jap scrap. They were considered to be trashy products, just like some of the Taiwan products at one time were considered to be low-quality Chinese products and so on. Well, then they sat down and they say, what should our products be like? What could they be like if we were to make changes? And they made the decision, and this is a critical decision that will run through everything we talk about today, they made the decision that we've got to get a reputation for quality. We've got to have people think about a Japanese product as if it were a high-quality product. And at that same time, E. Edward Deming went over to Japan and began talking about total quality management, began teaching them the Deming method. Deming, by the way, is as much a hero in Japan today as George Washington and Abraham Lincoln are in the United States. And he helped the entire Japanese industrial base convert from manufacturing low-quality, mass-produced products to manufacturing products which are now the admiration of the world. Same thing after World War II in Germany. However, Germany already had a reputation for high quality. Your job is to say, what would have to happen for me to produce products so that people thought about my products as if they were the highest quality in the market? And we'll come back to why this is so important in just a minute. So who is your customer today, and who is your customer likely to be tomorrow? And there is a very important marketing strategy called migration strategy. And a migration strategy means that you start with a particular type of customer and you either migrate the customer from smaller purchases through to larger purchases, or you migrate through the market. So you start selling when you're young and inexperienced to smaller customers, but as you become more knowledgeable and skilled, you migrate up to bigger and better customers. I had somebody come up to me recently, and I've had this happen 1,000 times, and they say, how can I sell to big ticket purchasers? How can I sell to people who have a lot of money? All I'm doing is I'm spending all of my time selling to people who have a little money, and I'm broke, and I can't pay my bills, and I don't know what to do. Well, here's the answer. You will always and only sell to people at your level. If you're broke and worried about your paycheck, then that's the kind of people you'll sell to. As you become more successful, you will sell to people who are more successful. Millionaires sell to millionaires. I was at a conference recently talking to about 250 people. The average income of the people in the room was $840,000. Every one of them ran their own businesses. Every one of them started off dialing for dollars out of the Yellow Pages. Every one of them sold on pure commission. Their average was $840,000 a year. And you know something? Their average customer was a millionaire. Now, when they started off, they were selling to people who drove trucks. Today, they sell only to millionaires and multimillionaires. One of my clients in that audience said the first question she asks people about their net worth is to make sure they're worth $20 million or more, because she doesn't work with people who have a net worth less than $20 million. She started off dialing for dollars out of the Yellow Pages, and she migrated herself upward. How do you do that? You get better and better at what you do. You read, you study, you listen, you get this program, you play it over and over again. And more than anything else, you think all the time is, how can I do my work better? How can I produce my products and services in such a way that I can attract and service people who have a lot of money? Okay, let's talk about marketing strategy. And marketing strategy, which is the core of all strategic planning, is aimed at multiplying your results. So, in marketing strategy, the very first thing you do is you idealize. Now, in idealizing, you imagine no limitations. You imagine that you have all the resources and all the ability and all the skills and all the money and all the intelligence and all the experience and education that you need to be able to market to the very best, the most perfect customers. You imagine that you can be, have, do whatever you want in your business. And then what you do is you create a vision. And a vision is the starting point of market leadership. A vision means that you project forward 3 to 5 years. And you wave a magic wand and you say, if my business was perfect in 3 to 5 years, what would it look like? If my business was perfect in 3 to 5 years, what would it look like? Now, sometimes I do strategic planning for large companies, including Fortune 500 companies. I've done strategic planning. My largest client was $172 billion, activities in 94 countries, 112,000 employees. And I sat down with their top team in London, England, and they were going through a turbulent time in the market. And I said, let's do a magic wand exercise. And I'm telling you this so that you can do it yourself. I said, imagine that the top newspaper in the country was going to write a story about your business 3 to 5 years from now. And they were going to send out their reporters and fan them out all over to talk to customers and suppliers and competitors and staff and leaders within your company and so on. And then they're going to come back and they're going to sit down with the lead editor and they say, look, you know, we wanted to write kind of like an attack story on this company, but we have to tell you, this is the best company we've ever seen. This company is incredible. We've never seen anything like it. Everybody raves about this company. Okay, the editor says, all right, then let's write it the way it is. So they write a beautiful story about you and your company in the leading newspaper or publication of the country. If you could dictate this story, what would you want them to say? Now, would you want them to say that you have an outstanding company in every way? Well, here's what we know. According to Theodore Levitt at the Harvard Business School, he said that the most valuable asset that a company or an individual, for that matter, has is the way you are known to your customers. It's the way your customers talk about you and think about you when you're not there. This is called your positioning statement, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a couple of minutes. So therefore, imagine that your reputation, and this is the key, it is your reputation that is the most valuable single thing that you create in the marketplace. And every single thing you do affects your reputation. Every single interaction that is noticed by a customer either improves your reputation or hurts your reputation. Your reputation is more valuable than anything else because your staff will change, your markets will change, your products and services and customers and competition, they'll all change. But your reputation is the thread that runs through everything. And if you have a great reputation, you're going to have a great business no matter what happens. So imagine with regard to your reputation, let's talk about your quality for your products or your services. Your goal is to have a reputation so that people in the marketplace say their quality is superb. Like Japanese products are superb. German products are superb. Many Taiwanese and Chinese products are excellent quality. The very best companies, large and small, in America have reputations for excellent products. And by the way, what they found in marketing strategy, that a reputation for excellent products enables you to charge 20 to 30% more for a product that does the same thing than over another company whose product does not have as good a reputation. So, what is your quality reputation? Your goal in 3 to 5 years is for people to say they have the finest quality products in the market. Second question is, what is your description? What are the words that people use when they think about you? Now, the very best words for anybody to use when they think about you is for them to say, they're the best. You're the best in your market or service area. Oh, yes, we deal with them. They're pretty much the best out there. They're a great company to work for, great company to work with, great company to buy from. They're the best. So then the question you always have to ask, and you come back to it, is what would have to happen for people to describe you and your products and services as the best in the business? What would you have to do more of or less of? What would you have to start doing or stop doing? What would you have to get into or get out of? Now, I was chatting with Jack Welch about 4 weeks ago in Iceland. We both happened to be there talking at the same time. And I attended a conference where he spoke to about 500 of the top business people in Iceland. We spoke briefly, and I was talking to him and reminding him of something that he did when he took over General Electric, and he discussed it with the audience. And when he took over General Electric, the first thing he did is said, we have something like 20, 30, 40, 50 different divisions all over the country, all over the world, and some of them are profitable and some aren't. So here's the rule. We're going to be number one or number two in every department or division, or we're going to get out of it. So he went through and he said to his executives, you must either be number one or number two within 2 years, or we will sell off or shut down the division. And they called him Neutron Jack, because a neutron bomb is famous for killing all the people and leaving the building standing. They called him Neutron Jack because what he did is he eliminated the division by eliminating all the people, because he said if you are not number one or number two, it does not fit in with our goal for our reputation for General Electric. It's the same with you. Your goal must be to be number one or number two. And the only question you ask is how. What do we have to do to be number one or number two in our industry? So develop a very clear vision of what you want to be in the future. Then ask yourself, with regard to your vision, what sort of income do you want your business to have? Whether it's your own personal business or a larger business, in other words, what kind of gross sales do you want? And then here's the second question, what kind of net profits do you want to make? And by the way, the two are not the same. Many companies that I work with will dramatically decrease the size of their business and increase their profits, because they will do less business, but they will do more profitable business with better customers. When you idealize and you think about your perfect reputation, think about the kind of customers that you want to have. Think about the very best customers you could possibly have, and then simultaneously, think about the kind of customers that you don't want to have. Especially, think about the customers you have today that really don't fit into your plans for tomorrow. In marketing today, many companies are going through their customer lists. They're saying, who are our very best customers? Who are the customers who we like to deal with the most, who are the most profitable, who give us the least number of complaints, who we're proud to have, who refer us to others? And what we're going to do is we're going to get more of those customers. And the other customers, the ones that take up so much time, that complain, that are never satisfied, that don't buy very much, or if they buy a lot, we don't make very much money on them, we're going to encourage them very gently and professionally to go somewhere else so we can spend more and more of our time servicing those customers that we like the most and who are the most profitable to us. This is one of the most important parts of marketing strategy. Now, the next thing you ask is your people and your managers. If your company was perfect in every way, what kind of people would you have working for you? What kind of people would you no longer have working for you? What kind of managers would you have? Do you know that many small companies go broke because they have one key person in an important position who's incompetent and they don't have the courage to get rid of that person? Do you know that some big companies like Enron and WorldCom and others right now are going broke because they had incompetent people in key positions and they allowed them to stay there because they thought they were making the money and they brought down the whole company? So therefore, just look at your people and say, if my company was perfect, is there anybody in my business today who wouldn't be there? And finally, look at your personal situation. If your company, if your business was perfect from a marketing standpoint, what would your situation be like? What would your position be? What would your sales be? What would your income be? What would your profits be? What would your work life be like? Who would you be working with? What would be your position in your company, and so on? In other words, imagine you could wave a magic wand and create the perfect situation for yourself. What would it look like? Now, this brings us to a key thinking tool, which we teach in our coaching program, and which I have to give to you because it's one of the most valuable thinking tools I've ever learned, and I call it, as you know, zero-based thinking. And in zero-based thinking, you basically look at your whole life and business, and you say, is there anything in my business, in my marketing, sales, customers, employees, staff, or activities, is there anything that I'm doing today that, knowing what I now know, I wouldn't get into again today if I had to do it over? Is there anything I'm doing today that, knowing what I now know, I wouldn't get into? And if the answer is there is something you're doing you wouldn't get into, there are customers you're selling to, you do have people working with you, you do have marketing methods and processes you wouldn't get into, then what you do is you say, how do I get out and how fast? And your goal now is to get rid of everything in your life that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get into. Well, the final part of marketing strategy is your mission. And in your mission, you just simply say, what is my mission for my business? In other words, where do I want to be sometime in the future? And I can give you 100 mission statements. Let me give you a very simple one. My mission is to be the very best in my business. And then the second thing you do in a mission statement is you attach a measure to it. And as a result, our gross sales are X amount, and our net profits each year are Y. And that becomes your mission statement. Our mission is to be the best in our business at serving our customers with the finest in products and services in our category. And as a result, we achieve gross sales of and net profits of every year. Now, that's a mission with a method and a measure. And that becomes your focal point. Now, there are four key parts of marketing, which are the essence of all marketing textbooks, all PhDs from the universities, and any deviation from any one of these four, any slips in any one of these four, can lead to underachievement and even the collapse of the enterprise. So number one is called specialization. In a crowded market where there are too many products chasing too few customers, where there are too many people offering too many varieties, you have to specialize. Companies and individuals who specialize are vastly more profitable than people who try to machine gun the market and do everything. Stephen King writes mystery and terror novels. He doesn't write travel novels, and he doesn't write detective novels, and he doesn't write romances. He writes a particular type of novel, and as a result of specializing, he's become one of the most successful writers in the world. Salespeople who specialize also become better and better in their area of specialization. And as a result, they do it better and better and are paid more and more. So here's some of the keys to specializing. First of all, specialize in a particular product or service line. You always ask yourself, what is my product or service line today? In other words, what does it do for my customer? Second of all, what will it be tomorrow, the way things are going? And then, what could it be, and what should it be? Or maybe you specialize with your product or service with a specific market, or in a specific area, or in a specific industry. One of my clients for many years was a man named Harry Bush. Harry Bush started a company called Allstate Legal Supply. Now, Harry Bush started off knocking on doors, selling stationery and office supplies door-to-door. As he did this, he found that he developed a kind of a natural affinity to selling his office supplies to legal firms. And he started to think, what if I specialized in legal firms? Because nobody else was doing that. So he began to focus all of his attention on understanding the special needs of law firms, of which, as you know, there are quite a few. Well, he got better and better at it to the point where Allstate Legal Supply, which started in a little town in New Jersey, grew and grew and grew. When I worked with them, they were at about $300 million a year. Today, they're over $1 billion a year. If a lawyer wants to start a firm, they can call Allstate, and Allstate will sell them everything. They will sell them the shelves, the carpet and the desks and the computers and the law books, the stationery and the staples. They will sell them the pictures on the wall. They are the very finest, best supplier of everything that a law firm needs in the country, and by specializing, Harry Bush built one of the most successful businesses in history. And I've been to conferences that Harry has sponsored with literally hundreds of law firms. So it's just an example of specializing in a specific market or area or industry. You can also specialize in a particular type of customer. For example, some people specialize in young mothers. Some people specialize in people in transition in the workforce. Some doctors specialize within people who have a particular problem, corns or bunions, if for example, or who need a particular type of cosmetic dentistry. And they specialize, and sometimes you can specialize in a combination of the above. You can specialize your product or service on a particular market that contains a particular customer. And what you do is you get better and better and better at doing more and more of that. Last week, I visited a man who does nothing but prepare the enamels for false teeth. And what he does is he matches the enamels, and he's one of the best in the entire country. And this is a specialization that enables him to make an incredible living because he's specialized in one tiny little function, which he operates out of his house. So what is your area of specialization? And remember, the natural tendency for us is to generalize and try to do everything. But all the big money goes to the people who specialize. Now, the second key to marketing is called differentiation. Remember what we said is that the whole purpose of marketing is to differentiate your product or service from that of your competitor. Well, what does this mean? It means you have to answer the question, why and how are you different from other people who want me to buy the same product or service in the market? Why and how are you different? So the starting point of all differentiation is for you to ask, what is your competitive advantage? What is your competitive advantage? A competitive advantage is something that gives you an advantage over your competition. And the competitive advantage is always something that your customer considers to be valuable and important and worth paying money for. Now, a very simple competitive advantage example for a 7-Eleven store or a convenience store is that it's close. That's all. Is you need a quart of milk, you need some extra coffee, you need some cream, and there's a 7-Eleven store that's just down the street. So their competitive advantage is not a wide variety of products or services. It's certainly not good prices because their prices are always higher. It's because they're close. What's McDonald's competitive advantage? Well, they say it's because we're clean, we have high value, we have reasonably good quality, and we're fast. So McDonald's gives you fast, clean, nutritious food or semi-nutritious foods, but speed is McDonald's value. Look at Domino's Pizza. Domino's Pizza said we deliver within 30 minutes or there's no charge. What was their competitive advantage? Speed over any of their competitors. All you have to do is be better in one decisive area and that is important to your customer and you can take the market. So what is your competitive advantage? Think about your competitors. Now, here's an important point. Since many of you are individuals, one of the most powerful competitive advantages you can ever develop is the quality of your personality. You see, there's nobody can be like you. Nobody can give the warmth, the attentiveness, the care, the special attention, the speedy responsiveness to needs that you can give. And in the final analysis, 80% or more of the buying decision will be made by the quality of the person who gives the service or who delivers the product. So therefore, you can be the competitive advantage. So everybody can be offering the same products or services. They can be offering life insurance or mortgage services or computers or software or anything else, but they can't offer you. So one of the things you say is, Mr. Prospect, there's a lot of other people can compete with me, but nobody else throws themselves into the bargain. When you buy from me, you get me as a part of the deal. Now, the second part of differentiation, the key to competitive advantage, is to ask, in what ways are you superior? What ways are you superior to your competition? So here's a model. Imagine that your prospective customer calls you up and says, I'd like you to come over. I'm thinking of buying a whole lot from you. So you get over there, and they usher you into a meeting room, and who's sitting around the table? Four competitors from four rival firms, and they've all been called over on the same basis. Then the decision maker walks in, and by the way, this is happening more and more often, and says, okay, I'm going to buy $1 million worth from one of you, and so I'm going to ask you only one question, and I want you to answer me the question honestly, and I want your competitors here to agree. And the question is, what one thing do you do in a superior fashion to your competitors? What can you do for me that is better than anything your competitors can do? And you can say, well, we give faster customer service than anybody else. Now, your competitors then have to say, yes, we have to admit that their service is faster than ours. Or our products work with greater speed and efficiency. Or we have the best prices. Or we have the greatest variety of products. Or we offer superb backup support and education for our customers. In other words, your competitors will have to admit that it is truly a competitive advantage, or it's not. You can't say, well, we give quality and service, because everybody offers quality and service. So here is the law of three with regard to breaking into a market or breaking out in front of the pack. It says that your product or service must be superior in three ways. It must be better in some way. It must be faster in some way. It must be cheaper in some way. It must be more convenient or easier to use. So ask yourself, in what three ways, and by the way, you can include yourself, in what three ways is my product or service superior to that of my competitors? And if you do not now have a competitive advantage, how can you develop one? What can you do that will make it better? What is your area of excellence? If someone were to say to you, in what way is your product or service excellent or outstanding in your market? What would be your answer? In all the work done on strategy, you have to be excellent in one of three areas. You have to be excellent in terms of your cost and price, like Walmart is. You have to be excellent in terms of your technology and innovation. You have to be ahead of the market in terms of the superiority of what you do. Or you have to be excellent in the quality of the relationship that you have with your customer. So it's got to be one of those three. It's got to be operational efficiency, technological superiority, or customer intimacy. In which of those three areas are you excellent? You have to be equal to your competitors in the other two areas, but you have to be superior in at least one area to break through the market. And finally, and the most important part of differentiation, is what is your unique selling proposition? What is unique? Remember, unique is a word that can't be qualified. Unique means only. It means you have a selling proposition or value offering that you offer your competitors that no other company in your industry can offer. Now, sometimes it's inherent in your business, in your product or service, in your pricing, in your trade-in policy, in your support services, in the features that you offer, and so on. And sometimes your unique selling proposition is you. And sometimes it is just your ability to move quickly when a customer has a need, to move fast or faster than your competition, to be more prepared, to be more professional, to have greater expertise, to be able to give the customer greater value because of you, that gives you the edge in the marketplace. But remember, all market success comes from clear, measurable differentiation that customers want, need, care about, and are willing to pay for. And you must be clear on what yours is. You must be able to write it on the back of a business card. The next key to marketing strategy is called segmentation. And segmentation is where you slice and dice your market to identify your very best prospective customers, the ideal customer we talked about earlier. So what you do is you say, who are the customers who can most benefit from what it is that I specialize in and do better than anybody else? So define them clearly. If they were perfect in every way, what would they look like? Who can most benefit? Now, here are some of the characteristics of your very best prospective customer. First of all, not only do they most appreciate what you do better in your area of specialization, but they have a genuine, immediate need for what you sell. They don't have a need for next year or next month. They have a need that needs to be satisfied within 90 days. Some of the most important advice I give to my clients is this. If a customer is not willing to make a decision or not ready or capable of making a decision within 90 days, almost invariably, this is not a prospect at all. Almost invariably, they will never buy at all. If somebody says to you, well, call me back at the end of the year, call me back in January, give me a call in 6 months, and you put them into your tickler file and you run around rubbing your hands saying, oh, good, have I got a great prospect here? No. If they're not ready to buy within 90 days, in 90% of cases, they will never buy at all. They're just trying to be polite and let you down easily. So here's another quality. If a really good, ideally segmented prospect is someone who already knows you or knows someone who knows you and likes your business, it's somebody who already consumes the type of products and services that you sell and likes them. For example, if you are running a first-class restaurant, people who go to first-class restaurants are ideal prospects for you because they're used to going to expensive restaurants and paying for good meals. That's why American Express has a special set of mailings and brochures that go to American Express cardholders. I have an American Express Platinum card, which costs twice as much as a gold card, and I get special mailings that would knock your eyeballs out. They offer me $50,000 cruises that cover half the world. They offer me 25,000 Patek Philippe watches. They offer me resort visits 7 days to expensive spas that cost thousands of dollars. Because why? Because I've got an American Express Platinum card, and they assume that people in that income category are accustomed to spending money on these things. And do you know something? They're probably not far off. Maybe not necessarily for me, but they're not far off for most people. So one of their very best prospects is someone who knows you, likes you, gets along with you, has bought from you before, has bought from other companies in your industry before, admires the company you work for. Oh, you work for ABC Company. Oh, that's a good company. I've heard of them. My friend has bought from them, and they've been very happy. Okay? Now, finally, a good customer is someone who can and will buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. In other words, they have the money to buy. They have the desire to own your product or service. They have the need for your product or service. They have the authority to buy it. It doesn't have to go through a committee. And they have the willingness to buy and pay for it within a reasonable period of time. Don't go back to the office and say, boy, I spoke to a wonderful prospect today. Of course, they just bought from our competitor, and they won't be able to buy for 5 years, but they sure like what I show them. No. This is not a good prospect because they can't buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. One of the most important things you do is you say, who are the prospects who have the need that is so pressing that they will buy within 60 to 90 days? How do I isolate and identify those prospects? Or how do I present my product or service in such a way that they conclude that they want it and need it and are willing to pay for it? Finally, by the way, a good prospect is a good source of referrals. If they really like what you do for them, they will speak positively of you to other people who will also buy. They will give you names and addresses. You can use their name and their testimonial in your sales materials. Sometimes one good prospect can crack open a whole market for you, one good customer. Now, the fourth key in marketing strategy is called concentration. The four, remember, are, first of all, specialization, second of all, differentiation, third of all, segmentation, and the fourth is concentration, which means that since you can't do everything and your resources are limited, you have to focus all of your best possible resources and money on your best possible customer segments. Use the 80-20 rule. Who are the top 20% of prospects and the top 20% of customers in your market? In terms of competitive advantage, what do you emphasize? What do you concentrate on selling in every single piece of marketing material? What are your very best methods of advertising? What are your very best methods of selling? What are your very best distribution channels? Keep concentrating all your time and energy and all your best people on those very prospects who can be the ones who can buy the most as soon as possible. Every bit of advertising you do has to be aimed at your very best possible immediate customers. Now, let's talk for a couple of minutes about the marketing mix. There's seven areas of the marketing mix, and any change in any one of these areas can dramatically change your results. And I want to introduce you to an approach which is called multivariate analysis. And that is based on old school, new school. old school was, yet you determined the elements of the marketing mix, and then you changed one at a time to see if that changed your sales. Today, however, more and more companies are finding that by changing more than one, a multivariable approach, you can bring about dramatic results. This, of course, is very much akin or subject to your judgment and your intelligence. But here they are. First of all, is the product. What is your product exactly? And here's the question. Is this the right product for this market at this time? Do people like it? Are people buying more of it? Is it profitable to sell? Do you like to sell it? Or do you have a hard time selling it? Are the margins narrow? Is the competition fierce? Do you get a lot of complaints and returns? One of the most important things that companies do is they keep standing back and saying, are we really selling the right product in this market at this time? So first of all, analyze your product or service. Sometimes this will lead you to realizing that, you know something, if we really want to grow our sales and profitability, we're going to have to start changing our product offering. So the second part of the marketing mix is called the price. Is your price reasonable? Is your price competitive? Is your price profitable? Is it the kind of price that people are willing to pay in today's marketplace? Many companies are finding that they have to dramatically change their pricing structure if they want to stay in the market. Give you a good example. When personal computers came into the market, it was an incredibly profitable business. People were selling at 50% net profit margins on computers. Now what has happened is computers and computer services have largely become a commodity. Everybody has them, and they're selling them by the truckload. So what has happened is more and more companies have had to compete on the basis of price, and they're going through price slashing, price deals, price concessions, price compromises. The best company in the industry in this area tends to be Dell. Why? It's because Dell realized, hey, the days of 50% margins are over. What we will do is we will go for massive volume at much lower prices. Look at Walmart. Walmart has enabled themselves to take over the world and become the most successful retail operation in history by running their business so efficiently that they can offer lower prices across the board than any of their competitors. So look at your prices. And the way you can tell if your product or your price is right for this market is that you're selling lots of it and making good profits and you're happy. So whenever you experience resistance, customer resistance, you have to stand back and say, do we need to change our product? Do we need to change our price? The third P in the marketing mix is called promotion. And you'll notice they all start with P. Promotion is the way that you get your product to the customer. Is your method of advertising the very best method? Sometimes if you change the product and the price and the way you promote it all simultaneously, your market explodes like a volcano. So is the way you advertise the best way? Is it working? Is your phone ringing? Are people calling you up? Are you getting good leads from qualified prospects? Or the way that you sell? Is your method of selling correct? Here's an interesting point. A small change in your sales methodology, your sales presentation, your methods of prospecting and to contacting new customers, or even the new customers that you go after, can dramatically change your business. Many companies find that as the market changes, the people who buy their products change as well. It's called customer migration. They migrate through, and you actually have to sell to different people at different levels of the company. So, should you change your method of promotion? The next P is called the place. Where do you sell your product? Do you sell it out of your office? Do you sell it out of the offices or stores of other people? Do you sell it by direct mail or by internet? Do you sell it by telephone? Or do you sell it by retail or wholesale? Do you sell it through direct distributors or through manufacturer's agents? IBM used to sell all of their products direct. You could only buy a product from an IBM salesperson. Then they made a dramatic change, and they offer their products through the retail outlets of other companies that specialize in computers. As a result, they sell $10 billion more than they could ever sell on their own. So maybe you need to change the place that you sell your product. Maybe you need to change the place where you offer your product or service. Some people find that by selling at trade shows, or by selling through the offices and facilities of other people, they sell more. The next P in marketing mix is called positioning. And positioning refers to how you are described by your customers. What are the words that people use to describe you in your marketplace? If you were to call 20 of your customers and say, what one word would you use to describe us? Or if a market survey firm were to do that, what word would people use to describe you? Would they say friendly, efficient, warm, helpful, fast, responsive, high quality, best in the business, enjoyable, pleasure to deal with? What kind of words would they use? All the best companies have decided upon the word they want, and they organize everything they do to make sure that they leave that impression in customers' minds. Nordstrom is famous for service. IBM is famous for quality and service. Mercedes-Benz is famous for quality engineering. BMW is the ultimate driving machine. Krispy Kreme Donuts is delicious, hot, fresh donuts. McDonald's is quick, fast, high-value, quick service. In other words, what do people say about you? And what could they say about you if you changed your business? What should they say about you if you want to dramatically increase your sales? The next P in the marketing mix is called packaging. How is your product or service packaged? Remember, people are extremely visual, and what they see makes an inordinate impact on their conscious and subconscious minds. When people look at your packaging, do they say, boy, that's beautiful packaging? Remember, people judge a book by its cover. When they look at your people, do they say, boy, those people look great? I have worked with thousands of salespeople over the years and helped them to change the way they dress and groom. I've shown them critical factors in the terms of the clothes they wear, the colors they choose, the way they match their accessories, the way they cut their hair, and so on. And some people have doubled and tripled their sales in as little as a month by simply changing their own personal packaging. One of the most valuable things you ever do in life is read a good book on how to dress for success in business, or pay a few dollars and hire an image consultant to give you advice on how to dress. I have even hired image consultants who've taken me shopping for the day and walked me through an exact new wardrobe in order to go on television, in order to talk about certain products that have then generated millions of dollars in sales. And their ideas were different from my own ideas about dress. Everybody, by the way, falls in love with the way they dress, and they don't realize that sometimes the way they look is turning off their customers. So, again, look at the packaging of your products and services. Even changing your waiting room in your business will dramatically change the attitude of people toward you. I've worked with customers, and I just gone in and looked at the waiting room where people wait to talk to them, and I said, this waiting room gives exactly the opposite message of the word that you want to own in your customer's mind. It does not say warmth, quality, efficiency, modernity, responsiveness, service. It says cheap, crummy, old, inattentive, uncaring. And they've gone back and they've renovated their waiting room and doubled their business. So very, very important. The next P, the final P, is people. And the people that represent you and how they talk and what they say and the way they look like is the critical factor in marketing. IBM concluded very early in the game that 99% of all the customer contact would be through their sales representatives. So they spent 2 to 4 years recruiting and hiring a sales representative, and then they spent 18 months training that representative so that when they went out, they were some of the finest-looking, smartest marketing representatives for any company in the industry. Now, as we start to come to the end of this program, what I want to talk to you about just for a second is what is called the ultimate customer experience. Now, the ultimate customer experience says that you have to stand back and say, if I could create an experience that was so beautiful for my customers that they would go away bragging about how well they were treated by my company, what would I want them to say, and what would I have to do to get them to say that? Sometimes I use as an example Morton's Steakhouse. Morton's has a very simple economic denominator for success. They want people who come to Morton's to come more often. To get them to come more often, they have two waiters that work on every table. When you sit down, there's somebody there immediately. And within minutes, they bring you bread, hot bread with butter, and they bring you a drink, at least water. Then they service you. Their presentation at your table is so incredible, you want to almost applaud the waiter. and then they service you quickly. You give the order, and basically they're gone. They're back in 3 minutes. They've got the first food on the table. And what they do is everything about the restaurant is designed to please you so much that you walk out feeling so happy that a couple of weeks later you say, honey, where do you want to go for dinner? Let's go back to Morton's. That was such a great experience. Now, here's my question. When people deal with you, do they say, wow, let's deal with you again? That was such a great experience. The key to your success is to cause people to deal with you again, and then to come again and bring their friends. You want to make the way you treat people so wonderful that people hear about you in the marketplace because of your reputation, then they come to you and they come again and bring their friends. This is the most important part of marketing. As we come to the conclusion here, I want to say this, is the very best reputation you can get is to be the quality leader in your market. Now, quality is what your customer says it is. And according to the multi-year, 25-year studies at Harvard, customers by the thousands have been asked, how do you define quality? Well, there's two parts of quality. They say it's the product or the service itself, and it's the way the product or service is sold and delivered. It's two factors. Only 20%, the 80-20 rule, is the actual product itself. The other 80% is how you treat people at every single stage of contact with you. From the very first phone call, through to the interaction, through to the sale, the delivery, the installation, and the follow-up service that takes place. Every customer contact, they say, is a moment of truth that tells the customer whether or not they're going to buy from you again and whether or not they're going to refer you to other people. So, in talking about the product, here is the definition of quality from the Crosby Quality College, and it is this. Your product does what you say it will do and continues to do it. In other words, your product fulfills your promises. Whenever a customer buys from you, they are giving you money in exchange for promises about your product or service. So what you do is you fulfill your promises. And the percentage of the time that your product or service continues to do what you say it will do, if it's a car, it continues to run. If it is a software program, it continues to operate. If it's an accounting service, all the work is done on time. If it's a life insurance policy or any kind of insurance policy, it pays off exactly when you say it will pay off. If it's a cellular telephone, it works all the time and gets through and has clear service. In other words, the percentage of times that the product or service does what you say it will do to get the customer to buy is what is known as your quality rating. And you get a percentage. In other words, if it works 100% of the time, you have a zero defect policy. If it works 90% of the time, you have a 90% quality rating. Your job is to continually look for ways to improve your quality rating. Because here's what they found. The company in every industry that has the highest quality rating also has the highest sales and the highest profitability. They also charge the highest prices and have the lowest price resistance. So, if we were to go into your marketplace and take a list of all the companies in your marketplace that sell your product or service and ask 1,000 customers who know the various companies, how would you rate these companies on a score of 1 to 10? Whatever company gets the highest rating, we will also find out later by looking at their books, they're also the most profitable company in the industry. So what is your quality rating in your industry? And whatever it is, make a decision to improve your quality rating in some way. Every day ask, how could we improve our quality rating amongst our customers and our prospects? Now, the second part has to do with the services. And the services are the way you treat people. And remember the old saying, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And all customers want to know in their interaction with you is, do you care about me? And if you care about them, then they'll care about you. And they'll want to buy from you and buy from you again and bring their friends. So in marketing, you can break it down to one simple focal point, and that is that the whole purpose of marketing is customer satisfaction. It is to differentiate your product or service from your competitors and then to satisfy your customers better than anybody else can do it. In the final analysis, this is the key to pricing, packaging, positioning, promotion, place. It's the key to market growth, profitability, greater sales. Customer satisfaction is the key to getting referrals and growing. It's the key to reputation and positioning. Everything that you do must be focused on giving your customer the utmost of satisfaction in whatever it is that they determine to be the most important ingredients. So we'll wrap up by saying that your job is to say, what is it that we do, and who do we do it for, and how do our customers define quality and customer satisfaction? And what is it that we can do to satisfy our customers better and better and better? And every single day, ask yourself, what is it that I can do to satisfy my customers at a higher and higher level? That is the key to marketing. How can you set yourself apart so that when the day is over and people talk about you and your company and your products and services, they will say that you are simply the best. They are simply the best in the business. That is the key to marketing.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.